Welcome to the Personal Financial Planning Section podcast, delivering insights from experts on tax, retirement, estate, risk management, investment planning, and practice management, designed to help you best serve your clients and take your practice to the next level. I'm your PFP section host, Sarah Bradley. Be sure to visit us at aicpa.org/PFP and stay tuned at the end of the episode for information on how to access valuable resources. And now over to our guest.
Thank you, Sarah. I'm Sam Adams, the CEO of Vert Asset Management, and I'm here to talk about sustainable investing. This is the first of a three-part introductory series on sustainable investing. Today, we're going to focus on what of sustainable investing. What is it? What are the different types of sustainable investing? And what are the performance expectations for each of those types? And lastly, what kind of investors are adopting those various different styles of sustainable investing? In the second part, I'll discuss the why of sustainable investing. Why do investors want to invest this way? And why do financial advisors and other financial services professionals want to help them or might add this service to their business? And in the third part, I'll discuss the how. How do you construct investment portfolios for sustainability? How do you talk about this with clients and prospects? And how can you grow your business potentially with this type of service? Okay, so today, the first part, we're going to define what sustainable investing is. Let's start with, well, what's all the fuss about lately? It seems like you can't go a day or two without some mainstream financial services publication having an article on ESG or socially responsible investing or impact investing, talking about big institutions adopting it or new fund providers coming on stream with a new ESG product. It's all over the place. What gives? Well, lately, more and more investors are embracing sustainable investing, and so assets are pouring into these funds. It's becoming newsworthy, and so people are starting to pay attention. And people are starting to ask questions about what it is. So that growth is best captured by a survey done by the Forum for Sustainable and Responsible Investment, or the US SIF. This is a nonprofit organization that compiles a trends report every 2 years on the growth of sustainable investing. In 2012, they estimated that the total assets managed for sustainability in the US was less than $4 trillion. In 2018, they put that figure at just over $12 trillion. So that's massive growth, from less than four to over $12 trillion in just 6 years. This growth has outpaced the growth in on percentage terms on regular or conventional investing. In fact, the USCIF estimates that one in every four of professionally managed dollars is invested with a consideration for sustainability. So that's really good news for people who are concerned about sustainability, right? If 25% of all professionally managed assets in the United States are investing for sustainability, that means that there's a lot of investors looking for companies to behave more sustainably. They want companies to try to be more responsible towards people and planet. So this encourages those companies to actually manage their environmental footprint and manage their social issues better and improve their corporate governance to continue to attract these investors that care about it. We can already see this effect in terms of disclosure. 5 years ago, less than 20% of companies in the S&P 500 voluntarily disclosed environmental performance metrics like their greenhouse gas emissions. Now, over 80% of S&P 500 companies voluntarily disclose their greenhouse gas emissions. And what's measured gets managed. And this is kind of one of the goals of sustainable investing for a lot of investors, is to start integrating these environmental and social and governance characteristics into the way capitalism works. And by doing so, hopefully get better outcomes for people and planet in the pursuit of profit. So this growth in sustainable investment, again, good news for people who are concerned about sustainability. And it's good news for investment advisors or investors who want to invest on a sustainable basis, because there's a lot more product available, there's a lot more money in there, a lot more options for people. But the downside of that is that with a lot of more product, a lot more providers, you have a proliferation in terms and ways of talking about it, and not all of those ways of talking about it are consistent. In fact, sustainable investing doesn't really mean much anymore. It's kind of a catch-all term for a series of different types of sustainable investing that include social responsible investing, impact investing, environmental, social, and governance, or ESG investing, and several other different types of smaller types of investing on a sustainable basis. So in order to define sustainable investing, we have to get our heads around what these different types of investing are. Unfortunately, this use of these terms interchangeably, calling all sustainable investing impact investing or all of it social responsible investing, means we've lost kind of the original definitions of those terms. And that's a shame, because they actually meant something back when they were originally brought out. And so what I'd like to do is go through a kind of historical tour of where social responsible investing came from, where impact investing came from, and how ESG investing came about, to give us back those original definitions. And that'll help us make some distinctions between the different types of sustainable investings. And this is important, because the different types have vastly different outcomes in terms of investment performance, for one, but also in terms of how financial advisors might run their business. Some of those types of sustainable investing are far more complicated and require far more resources for others, and so they may not be suitable for all types of financial advisor practices. Okay, so let's go through this historical tour, like I said. Traditionally, investing has all been about maximizing return for a given level of risk, right? This is investing for total return. And again, let's call this conventional investing. It's what we've always done and will continue to be done by many investors if they're saving for retirement or education costs or whatever. The clear priority for the conventional investor is financial. They're looking for returns. And any consideration for social or environmental outcomes, probably not even considered. If they are, they're distant, distant second. So let's call conventional investing the left pocket, if we will. If someone were interested in solving a social problem or an environmental problem in this traditional way of thinking, they do this through philanthropy. They'd find a charity that works on that cause, say maybe human health or poverty alleviation or some environmental cause, and they would give money to that charity. And the purpose of doing so would be to solve that social or environmental problem, or at least help solve it. Let's call this the right pocket. So philanthropy is in the right pocket, and investing is in the left pocket. This traditional way, we call it two-pocket thinking, is I make money with my left pocket, and I give money to the causes that I care about with my right pocket. And we don't mix the two pockets. In fact, many financial advisors have in the past and continue to do so today, tell clients, you don't want to mix those two. You want to invest for total return. That way you can make more money and give more money to charity and have more impact that way. But over time, more and more people have become a bit disenchanted with this kind of two-pocket approach to investing. Let's take an example. Let's say you have a physician's endowment, and they use this endowment to fund cancer research. And so the way that endowments typically work is you have 95% of the assets in the endowment are invested for maximizing total return over the long haul. And then every year, the physicians in the endowment choose where they're going to spend that 5% that they draw down and give to charitable causes or to fund their cancer research every year. Well, that's a good mission-oriented approach. You invest for total return, give that money to the cancer research. But does it make a lot of sense for those physicians funding cancer research to have the 95% of their portfolio investing in tobacco stocks or other companies that create cancer-causing agents? Maybe not. Maybe there's a bit of a contradiction there that they might want to resolve. So what's occurred over time is that more and more investors have come up with alternatives to this two-pocket way of thinking. The original alternative to it, which stretches back hundreds and hundreds of years, is what we call social responsible investing. And in the early days, it was simply excluding stocks that people had problems with. We usually give credit to religious organizations like the Quakers, who said, I'm going to continue to invest with my left pocket in a kind of conventional way, trying to maximize total return, but I am unwilling to invest in certain companies that I fundamentally disagree with, either their products or their business practices. So we often point to the sin stocks, alcohol, tobacco, gambling, pornography, or weapons manufacturers. These are the types of companies that socially responsible investors might exclude because they fundamentally disagree with those products. Now, that list is expanded. There's more and more exclusions depending on whether people have Catholic values or Muslim values. And there are also now SRI approaches where you invest positively in companies that are working for your values. But in all of this is the implicit idea that you're willing to balance your need for financial return with the need to express your values. So it doesn't matter how well tobacco stocks or alcohol stocks are going to perform. If I object to those, I'm not going to put them in my portfolio. So at some level, I'm willing to balance. I'm willing to face a trade-off between returns and my values. We call that values-based investing. And SRI, or social responsible investing, was the first version of that. On the right pocket side, the philanthropic side, some people who were charity inclined were not seeing the types of outcomes that they wanted to see with their charitable endeavors. You might remember in the 80s, the Live Aid concerts that Bob Geldof put on, raising lots and lots of money that was turned into resources like food and medicine and shipped to Africa to help alleviate the starvation and the medical problems that countries in Africa were facing. What we often don't remember, however, is Bob Geldof going back to those countries a few years later and checking up on them and seeing how they were doing. And it was very disappointing for him to see that in many cases, those communities were in the same situation that they were earlier before they had received all those donations. The charitable approach of shipping those resources in from afar didn't seem to materially change their situation over time. So some philanthropists, big philanthropists, some of them very successful capitalists, who that's how their successful companies created their wealth that allowed them to be philanthropists, thought maybe we should try a for-profit approach to philanthropy. Maybe solving these social environmental problems might be better done in a for-profit fashion because for-profit entities tend to be ongoing, right? They are ongoing concerns. And so why don't we, instead of shipping in milk, for example, why don't we give some microloans to some of the villagers who can then buy a cow or a couple of goats, and then they can sell the milk as a business to the villagers there. And if we do enough of that, that village will have its own milk and we won't have to ship it in. Similar things like clean cook stoves or solar-powered mobile telephones. Using a for-profit model to distribute these new technologies or the better ways of doing things sometimes works better than a charitable approach. So that was the birth of impact investing. Now, keep in mind that for impact investing, the real purpose of that investment was the impact. It was to fix a social problem, alleviate an environmental concern. Okay? If there was a return on the capital on that investment, it was often plowed back into that project to increase the scope and scale of it, thereby solving more of the social or the environmental problem. The point of the investment was not to make money. Let's review real quickly. We had the left pocket, conventional thinking, maximize total return. A alternative to that, which is social responsible investing, where you incorporate your values and you balance that return with your values. On the right pocket side, the philanthropy side, an alternative to that is impact investing. Again, both approaches focused on solving a social and environmental problem. Financial concerns are secondary. I mean, in fact, in philanthropy, right, the return is minus 100%, right, except maybe a tax deduction. But in the impact investing, you might get some capital back. But again, not the major point. Your focus is on the social or environmental impact. That was the situation for a while until a new entrant came on to the scene, which is environmental, social, and governance investing, or what we call shorthand ESG investing. ESG investing is far closer to the conventional investor than the other alternatives because its focus really is on maximizing total return for a given level of risk. The ESG investor might do fundamental research and security selection just like a conventional investor, but they add factors, risks, and opportunities related to environmental issues and to social issues and into corporate governance issues. Let's use some examples. We have two widget manufacturers. Widget manufacturer A makes 100 widgets a year and creates 20 tons of pollution. Manufacturer B creates 100 widgets a year and creates 30 tons of pollution. If they have the same revenue, maybe the widget manufacturer with more pollution is a less efficient producer. Maybe they have some costs coming down the line pretty soon that we haven't seen, maybe from an environmental fine or maybe from disposal costs for that excess pollution. But all other things being equal, widget A manufacturer, less pollution, less waste, probably a safer bet, all other things being equal. Similarly, think of two service companies with employees. If the first company has a high employee turnover, lots of employee lawsuits and labor strife, maybe some workplace accident rates that are high, they might be a riskier entity than a company that employees are happy to work with. They have great ratings on Glassdoor, or they have rave reviews, easy to recruit, voted one of the best places to work, etc. That's a social metric. Other companies that have good corporate governance practices, like they have independent boards, they have independent audit committees, they have strong disclosure and reporting practices. These are probably better companies than ones that are not. So the ESG investor is using these additional information sets to try to improve the risk return outcomes of their portfolio. So in that sense, they're aligned with the conventional investor. They're not compromising their return expectations because of their values. So why is ESG lumped into sustainable investing then? Well, the goal of some ESG investors is to get the whole system of capitalism to change by starting to incorporate these issues. We used to call some of these environmental, social, and governance characteristics non-financial criteria. They weren't really priced. It's hard to price clean air. It's hard to price human safety. It's hard to price well-being, right? But if we could put a price on those things, if we could get capitalism to start putting prices on things we value and costs on things that we want to see less of, the capitalist system itself would start making allocation decisions away from the bad things towards the good things. And this would be kind of the next evolution of capitalism, where in our pursuit of profit, we're naturally looking after people and planet within that pursuit of profit. We call it the triple bottom line, a term coined by John Elkington, a writer and sustainable professional in the United Kingdom. So let's review. You have conventional investing, the left pocket, maximize total return, no consideration given to environmental or social concerns. Then you have ESG investing, which is, again, maximizing total return. Again, a value investor striving for better value outcomes in terms of economic value, but considering the environment and social issues along with corporate governance. Then we have socially responsible investors who are values-based investors. They want to express their own personal values, whether they're against tobacco or against guns or pro-choice or whatever it may be. These people are willing to balance their returns against their values. Then we have impact investors who are mostly trying to solve an environmental social problem and are less concerned about their returns. And then, of course, we have philanthropy, which is all about the social and environmental outcomes. There are two principal reasons why we want to keep these distinctions between ESG, SRI, and impact investing in front of our minds and in front of our clients' minds. The first reason is performance. An ESG fund that adds these extra financial criteria of environmental, social, and governance into their analysis, that is still a well-diversified portfolio, it might have low costs, might even be an index fund. There are now ESG indices that closely hug the normal conventional indices. You can expect performance broadly similar with the indices in a strategy like that. There's nothing hugely different about ESG investing and conventional investing if the portfolios are constructed similarly to suggest you'd have vastly different returns. An SRI portfolio, depending on how it's constructed, could have vastly different returns. Exclude whole industries from a portfolio, you'll have less diversification. You could have lower returns as a result if some industry, tobacco is a good example, that has had really good returns over the last 20 years. So different performance expectations with SRI, but that's okay because the investors in SRI are willing to make those compromises. And of course, impact investing is much more akin to investing in private equity or venture capital in the sense that your project could be really successful and you could have a great return, but many of those projects are going to fail and you're going to get minus 100% return and anything in between. Right? So that's one consideration. The performance is very different. The second consideration is that it's very different in terms of how you offer those in your business. If you're a typical financial advisor that has high net worth clients and families that you manage portfolios for, perhaps you use portfolios of mutual funds or ETFs, and you have model portfolios. Most of your clients get similar portfolios, of course, tuned differently to their risk preferences and tolerances. But you go through a discovery process, you ask for their risk tolerance questionnaire, you figure out what the kind of risk they can handle, and then you might give them a 60-40 portfolio or what have you, and then you use mutual funds and ETFs to populate that asset allocation. With ESG, you can do the same thing, just use ESG funds at that last step rather than conventional funds. Right? So the process is very similar, quite straightforward for that type of financial advisory business. But if you're going to get into the SRI type of approach, now you're getting into a slightly more in-depth conversation with the client about their values. How do you feel about guns? How do you feel about abortion? How do you feel about gender equality? Then you need to find funds or investment approaches that match your client's specific values. Okay? It can be done. It's just a little bit more of an involved process. And of course, impact investing is a whole nother kettle of fish. These are often not even mutual funds or ETFs. They're single projects. They're private equity vehicles or private debt vehicles. They're limited partnerships. It could be anything. And the due diligence requirements, of course, are much, much higher. They're not on a single platform. They might be hard to research and encourage a whole nother level of commitment from an advisor. So that's a brief tour of the different types of sustainable investing and the different types of outcomes you might expect and the different approaches your business might need to embrace them. What kind of investors are embracing these types of investing? Well, the impact investing space is really reserved for the wealthy individual who has lots of discretionary capital and the resources to do that additional due diligence and research on these projects. Okay? There are impact funds now available, but many of them for more mass affluent investors, but most of them have high investment minimums and are reserved for sophisticated investors. The SRI investor could be any investor, family, office, high net worth individual, mass affluent client who has very strongly held beliefs and is passionate about them and wants to invest only according to those beliefs. We don't see many institutional or pension plan investors investing this way unless they're mission-driven organizations, because organizations tend to have multiple values within them because they have multiple people within them. So SRI is more of a province of the family and the individual or the mission-driven organization. ESG is done by lots of people. It's done by individual investors. It's done by families. It's done by 401k plans. It's done by large pension plans. In fact, of the 10 largest pension plans in the world, 7 of them are using an ESG approach for managing their assets. Now, that's a striking statistic. That'll tell you that these investors in particular, who are fiduciaries, of course, and are charged with managing the capital of their citizens, in the case of the Norwegian pension fund or the Japanese pension fund or CalPERS, the California Public Employee Retirement System, all of these large, sophisticated institutional investors are using ESG because they believe it improves the risk and return outcome of their portfolios. So I like to say, if you're investing on an ESG basis, you're on solid ground. Some of the biggest and best institutional investors are doing so as well. If you're investing on an SRI basis, you might be on higher ground because you're incorporating ethical or moral beliefs into your approach. And if you're investing on an impact basis, you're really going for making some dramatic changes in people's or the planet's outcomes, and kudos for you for doing so. On behalf of the PFP section, this has been Sam Adams. If you enjoyed this podcast, I highly encourage you to visit the PFP section website and access more investment planning resources. Stay tuned for Sarah Bradley, who will tell you how to find these valuable resources. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for sharing with our community of listeners. Want more information, resources, tools, and guidance on technical and practice management topics? Visit aicpa.org/PFP and check out the show notes for this episode as well. So if you're not already a member, think about joining the PFP section, which is designed to save you time, help you best serve your clients, and take your financial planning practice to the next level. You'll gain access to a robust selection of high-quality technical and practice management resources like guides, 24/7 access to an online learning library, client communication and education tools, up to 8 hours of free CPE, and more. Don't forget to leave us a review so we can continue bringing valuable and relevant content. And subscribe to our podcast channel so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to next time.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.